that innocent victims have been slaughtered by people that had ruthless power.
This is true. I don't think that that's ever
we can look at Pol Pot.
Let me interject.
You know, Pol Pot.
Hang on, Bob. Let me interject. I haven't had a chance to say anything here. Let me just briefly, before we get into Pol Pot, one of my old favorites.
Pol Kinroof Pot.
Yes, that, you know, I don't see any statues to Montezuma around well, San Jose City Hall. And I think some people, you know, might be a little pissed if or Pol Pot, for that matter. I don't think you want, Pol Pot did revolutionize Kampuchea, but I don't know if that's was such a good thing.
A better Cambodia. Now, Pol Pot was an idealist, Robert.
Yes, he was. But the main subject of this show is civil rights for the homeless, and I would like to get the two of you steered back to Camp Paradise.
Let's talk about Camp Paradise a little bit. I'll get into that, but if we're going to justify the destruction of public property because of some political ideal, mm-hmm. then I don't want any part of it.
Well, no one says you should have any part of it, Bob. In fact, you know.
In fact, I will speak out against that. In fact, I might even agree that the statue of Cristoforo Colombo has no business in the San Jose Civic Center, all right? But the way that one goes about it, mm-hmm. is not by destruction of public property.
Well, I know you have a very kind of, one might even say, legalistic approach to things on occasion. Would that be fair to say?
I believe that we have the right to petition the government for a redress of grievances. It's a wonderful thing, and we should exercise it when appropriate and appropriately.
What about those Boston Tea Party people? Should we put them all in jail? What do you think?
They were destroying public property. That was civil disobedience.
It was
the beginning of a civil.
They weren't.
No, war.
I disagree. It wasn't civil disobedience. Civil disobedience is when you take responsibility for your actions, like satyagraha, and you go to jail. These guys dressed up as Indians throwing tea into the harbor.
Well, they didn't want to go to jail.
I will
stand corrected. They disguised themselves.
It was illegal behavior.
It's used as a way to justify a lot of rather silly activity. The Boston Tea Party is an isolated example that we all taught about in grade school as a glorious page in American history.
I mean, that Sam Adams was not exactly a legal guy.
Okay. I don't think that you can take the Boston Tea Party and justify someone smashing a statue of Cristoforo Colombo. By the way, if you really want to do some activism that would be appropriate, it's to de-anglicize the guy's name.
Mm-hmm.
There never was anybody named Christopher Columbus.
Well, that's where we provide you with an opportunity to do that, Bob.
I think lots of us don't really care what race Christopher Columbus belonged to. I think that we object to his genocidal tendencies. I can see what you're saying about, keeping things most truthful. And I do think that language is a powerful tool and is often, unfortunately, manipulated. But
it's always manipulated.
But I think that, And I agree with you in what you're saying about the destruction of property. I personally would not have gone about it the same way. I think that a lot of us who are supporting Jim are not directly supporting his way of going about it, but are supporting the removal of the statue, which should not have been there in the first place. And also, I think a lot of us feel like Jim would be more effective out of jail than in jail.
You guys have 30 seconds each.
Well, I Columbus, Ohio.
I'm not even going to have nothing to say about Columbus.
If we follow this, if it's appropriate to destroy a statue of Cristoforo Colombo, a.k.a. Columbus, then it's therefore appropriate to destroy utterly.
In your last 15 seconds, do you have anything to say about rent control?
Rent control regulates residential rent increases while a tenant resides in the regulated unit.
I know what it is. What's happening with it, Bob?
It's appropriate for our times
we know
and
that.
Place.
What's happening
with it? As I have expressed time and time again, it's one of those issues that becomes very, very emotional and irrational almost immediately.
Anything in the last week, any new developments?
And until there is a bandwagon, it's probably not going to go anywhere.
So Fitzmaurice has not called you and demanded to put it on the agenda, eh?
Would I lie to you, Robert?
No, I
would. This subject, no.
Sorry.
In fact, you would be on the short list of people that I would call were that to be the case.
I'm afraid that he will never call you then because he knows you'll be giving it away to, evil forces. I got to go, Bob. Anything more you want to say before I...
Thanks for letting me get on the air.
Sure.
All right. You bet.
Bye-bye.
And you are still tuned to your favorite station, Free Radio Santa Cruz, where we tweak the mic and tweak your ears. Another incoming call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Hi, I guess Bob's never heard of anyone like Mother Jones or Joe Hill, or any of those people that that because, they didn't teach us that in history in school. There's a lot of history they didn't teach us in school. We only heard the history of the ruling class, and that's all he heard. I don't know, he just seems to go against everybody's ideas anyway. But, you know, sometimes
now remember,
destruction of public property is necessary to get your point across.
I agree with you.
Joe Hill, they just got together at one instance, and they just all jumped up and down till they broke a jail. You know, rather than comparing a statue to the whole city, that's absurd. That's more like what Pol Pot did anyway, and that was absurd. Anyway, but yeah, we are on homeless issues, and, you know, he's against the way that they're doing it, too.
Doug, remember that Bob is also very, very much an advocate of ending the sleeping ban and put a lot of energy into a petition drive to that effect. He's very much into rent control and stood up for that when gutless wonders on the city council will do nothing.
All right. I don't know why.
He's also against corruption in the
someone else is operating the city council.
In the district attorney's office. You may remember he stood single-handedly nearly against District Attorney Art Danner in Danner's shenanigans, and I think I give Bob a lot of credit.
Right, that's right. I'm just talking about supporting other people, you know, in their particular efforts. He has really major problems with that unless he wants to direct it or control it.
Well, we all have our approaches, and I think that we have a community broad enough.
Sure, I support, though, a lot of things. God, you know, I support you, Robert.
You better, man. I'm the coolest guy around.
You're just such a asshole to all those city council people.
I do what I can, man. I give them a lot of shit.
Was going to give a report.
Please.
Maybe I was wanting to give it a little more anonymously than I have now. So
you've
but
blown
anyway,
your cover.
A couple of weeks ago, the PG&E reported my medical marijuana patch. It's a real small one.
The police
came out and took pictures of it a couple of days later, and that was 2 weeks ago, and everything, it seemed to be, everything was in order, so I haven't heard back, so thought I'd just let that out. You know,
are you
not call them and bug them anymore about it.
Are you inviting all of us to your medical marijuana patch to sample your wares?
It won't do you any good, man. It's a long time to harvest.
I see. Well, for anybody who wishes to donate medical marijuana to Free Radio Santa Cruz, again, the phone number, it's Post Office Box 7507. And I don't know, you better have your WHAM card ready. I think actually probably not the most appropriate thing to do because while marijuana is more valuable than gold these days, it's also the basis for inappropriate, unconstitutional, but unfortunately not unlawful police behavior, which we see happening every day in the drug war. Anything else, Doug? What do you think of the idea of one too many camp paradises?
Well, you know, there are probably in this county 100 camp paradises, and probably about 1,000 camps with one or two people in them, and 300 or 400 cars with people living in them. So, you know, they just know about Camp Paradise is all. And they know about other ones, too, but until everyone else finds out about it, they act like they don't know about it. You know, it's just all that phony government stuff. You know, they're just as phony as Bush and all his, man. You know, I really hate it, but, you know, Santa Cruz is no better than any other government. I've known towns that had better city governments.
So. Hey, I don't want to hear you criticizing our city council. Is there anything more you wish to say?
No.
Thank you for calling in, and you could send your spiffs here to Free Radio Santa Cruz. If that doesn't work, I'll meet you downtown.
Okie dokie.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Well, last 15 minutes of the show, and we have an early entrance by Earth First, who will no doubt be giving a great show starting at 8 o'clock, the vicious Uncle Dennis, whose fine work is, of course, well prepared for. I wish I actually were as organized as Uncle Dennis is. He actually often has a script together. Here's a talk show host who doesn't like to be called a talk show host, but I like to think of him as a talky kind of...
Well,
he calls it news. I call it babble. Well, who knows? Actually, it's not babble. It's good information. It's coming up from 8 to 10. We were hoping to get reports from activist Steve Argue, who apparently is... I can kind of convey a secondhand report from him, but I'm hoping he will call in. It may be that he's tried because we only have one phone line into the studio. The report I got from Steve earlier today was that in the trailer park where he is staying, the police, the deputies actually, arrived and red-tagged a tent recently because it was blocking the view of a neighbor. And I found this really interesting, and he was going to describe it in more detail. Red-tagging a tent. I've never heard of that before, but I guess it's a possibility, and apparently, by his account, that's what happened. There's also, he's been a witness, he also got a jaywalking ticket the other day, and I guess, you know, what's the news there? How many times have you crossed a street, you know, not at a stoplight? It just seems interesting that activists are singled out for this and others get to go on their way. I guess it's natural police department nature on this matter to do that. I shake my head when it happens. Also, I'm concerned about ongoing instances of abuse against newspaper vendors, homeless people selling street spirit, the newspaper I mentioned before. If you want to sell street spirit, it's easy to do. You just call 423-HUFF. That's my voicemail line, also the voicemail for Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we'll get you some papers. The first 10 are free. The next 10 are a dime a piece. You can sell them for whatever you want. Suggested price, $1. You get a, 1,000% profit. It's gravy. And frequently, you can sell a lot. It's actually a source of revenue, certainly a source of coffee money. And it's also a source of news and information for the community. I'm also hoping for a report from Camp Paradise, because I understand Larry Templeton's cellular phone is working. So all you Paradisios out there, get on the horn and let us know what's cooking out at Paradise, if anything new is cooking. I know that there's been talk about the new fastest bike in the world that the bike shop is making out there. There's been talk about a benefit bike race. I've heard that, a bike marathon. I've heard different kinds of rumors, but what's really going on? Who knows? We need them Camp Paradise people to call in particularly and tell us, or possibly some of their cohorts, like nearby neighbors, hint, hint, call and tell us just what is going on out at Camp Paradise. But until you do, I've got some other stuff to bring up, which I will. I was able to copy the ICORN decision at the request of some Green Party people who are not following the lead of the Green Party's homeless shirking group, as I call their homeless working group, the group that essentially spent its time attacking me and then disappeared into the distance to do nothing, N-O-T-H-I-N-G, about homeless issues and about Camp Paradise. But the Green Party itself is to be commended, apparently, for kicking down some money for an ad to be eventually coming out in the Metro supporting Camp Paradise, little girl with a sign, Daddy, where are we going to have our home? I'm not quite sure exactly what it said, but it was very poignant, and you can actually, if it's not been torn down, it's still in one of the phone booths near the library downtown. The ICORN decision is something that came out some months ago, actually some years ago, which allows campers to make the necessity defense. And it's had to do with a case in Santa Ana, California, where a guy named ICORN, I think I may read you a little bit about it. I did several years ago when I wrote an article on the case, and actually it was more recent. But the basis of the idea is to flood the courts with cases involving the necessity defense. And I'm going to read you a little bit about the ICORN decision, unless we get a phone call, in which case I will take the phone call, and it looks like we did get a phone call.
Hi, you're on the air.
It's just Bob LaMonica wishing to defend himself with some brief comment.
No, there's no defense for you, Bob.
I have gathered signatures for the medical marijuana drive. Mm-hmm. I didn't initiate that. I got involved with Jerry Brown when he came to town. I certainly didn't initiate his presidential campaign.
Down with Brown, that's what I said.
I helped to gather signatures for the sleeping ban.
I know.
Repeal. I've spoken out about the police review board. There are many actions that I've aligned with that I have not initiated.
Mm-hmm.
There are many actions that I have initiated. But I don't tend to join things like SCAN and the Green Party because I don't want to go along with things I don't agree with.
Hey, Huff awaits you, man.
I think last thing I want to say is that for me, it's what's the issue, who's the candidate.
I got you. Well, I thank you for calling
thank
in, Bob.
Thank you.
Sure.
Of course, everybody who doesn't agree with me is wrong. I hope you all know that out there. The Eichhorn decision, I'm going to read you a little bit about this. James Eichhorn was cited for a violation of the city's anti-camping ordinance on the evening of January 25, 1993. Section 10402 reads as follows. Unlawful camping. It shall be unlawful for any person to camp, occupy camp facilities, or use camp paraphernalia in the following areas except as otherwise provided. Any street, any public parking lot or public area, improved or unimproved. Camp paraphernalia included a sleeping bag. Following a detour to the Supreme Court that established the ordinance was facially constitutional, Tobe versus City of Santa Ana, Eichhorn's case eventually went to trial. In a significant pretrial ruling, the court, Judge James M. Brooks, determined Eichhorn could not present a necessity defense to a jury. Eichhorn had offered to prove that on the night of the violation, every shelter bed within the city that was available to a homeless single man with no children was occupied, and that he was involuntarily homeless, i.e., he had done everything he could to alleviate his condition. Due to circumstances beyond his control, defendant, a 14-year resident of Santa Ana, had been unable to find work as a manual laborer that paid enough to allow him to find an alternative place to sleep. The court determined defendant had not made a sufficient showing to allow a jury to consider his necessity defense. Quote, it appears that the defense of necessity is not supported by the offer of proof. The first element wasn't satisfied in the court's view. No significant imminent evil for this defendant or any other person. The court's questions and comments suggested it was not impressed with the defendant's claim that lack of sleep was a significant evil. The judge said, what do you mean bodily harm, like tired eyelids or tired blood? If he didn't sleep here, he'd lose sleep, and this would be a horrible physical thing to impose on him. Another thing the judge said. Defendant objected that the court's ruling not only goes against what we understand to have been the statements and admissions by the people and by Judge Marginis, who had previously handled the case, but undermines the whole reason why we were going forward at trial. It's clearly eviscerated our entire defense. In light of Judge Brooks's ruling on the necessity defense and noting that there was no dispute that Eichhorn was in a sleeping bag in the Civic Center on the night in question, Eichhorn's lawyer agreed to go forward without a jury on the constitutional issue whether the ordinance was unconstitutional as applied to him on his alleged involuntary homelessness. Trial commenced without a jury on May 1996. Officer Carol Craig testified defendant was in a sleeping bag on the ground about 10:30 p.m. outside a county office building in the Civic Center. He was using his clothes as a pillow. Craig asked, as she always did, why Eichhorn wasn't at the National Guard Armory, a homeless shelter several miles away. A bus from the Civic Center to the Armory usually picked people up between 5 and 6 p.m. According to Craig's police report, defendant replied he had tried a while back. It was full, so he never returned. The court judicially noticed that the walk between the Civic Center and the Armory was through very dangerous areas of town. Police photographed and cited Eichhorn, then asked him to move on. He complied. James Meeker, a professor at the University of California, Irvine, in the Department of Criminology, Law and Society, testified he had conducted a study on homelessness in January and February 1993. There were more than 3,000 homeless individuals in Orange County during this period. Most homeless were longtime residents of Orange County, average 14 years, who had lost jobs and could not afford housing. The county had relatively little affordable housing, and it had been decreasing. Single men had a particularly difficult time because they were less likely to receive the support from family, friends, or governmental agencies. Most were sleeping outdoors because they had no other choice. Homeless individuals were 10 times as likely to be victimized by crime than the average population. Many homeless stayed in urban areas because of proximity to assistance providers, food, clothing, and shelter. Day jobs, just 8% were unemployed and not looking for jobs. Public facilities, restrooms, etc., and the lack of transportation. Timothy Shaw was the executive director of the Orange County Homeless Issues Task Force. He pegged the number of homeless in Santa Ana at about 1,500 persons in 1993. There were about 118 shelter beds available for single men like Eichhorn, most available on a first-come, first-served basis. In addition, the Armory could accommodate 125 persons during the winter, although it frequently exceeded its capacity. As was routine, these shelters were full on the night Eichhorn was sighted. Maria Mendoza was the county's homeless coordinator and oversaw use of the Armory as a shelter. The Armory was available only on cold winter nights. She explained how the bus to the Armory would leave from the Civic Center in the late afternoon. Those on the bus had priority at the Armory. Eichhorn had spent some 20 nights there in December and January. On January 25th, the armory was 13 persons over capacity, which was not uncommon. That the armory would accept excess capacity was not a given. Usually only those at risk, women and children, would be admitted after the maximum was reached, and generally only when it was raining. Eichhorn, 49 years old, testified that he had moved to Costa Mesa in 1972, a few years after his discharge from the Marine Corps. The Vietnam veteran lost his job at a machine shop in 1980 and subsequently ended up without a place to live. He moved to Santa Ana because a friend of his told him about a job driving an ice cream truck. He sold ice cream for about a year and was able to afford a motel room. When he lost that job, he frequented the casual labor office in Santa Ana until it closed. When he worked and could save enough, he would live in a motel. He also relied on general relief and food stamps. However, general relief was no longer enough to secure affordable housing because most of the less expensive motels had been torn down. If he could not get into a shelter, Eichhorn would sleep in the Civic Center, where he was close to services, including restrooms, and where there was, quote, safety in numbers, i.e. where it was less likely someone would steal and attack him while he slept. He loved to work and did so every chance he got. He did not like living outside. He had been turned away from the armory in the past and had a nervous walk back to the Civic Center. On January 25th, he did not recall whether he had tried to find a spot at a shelter or whether he heard that the shelters were full. He recalled eating around 5 p.m. He was in his sleeping bag listening to his radio when Craig arrived, Officer Craig, around 10:30 p.m. Eichhorn's mother and stepfather lived in Long Beach, but staying with them was not an option because he was an adult responsible for himself. Defendant denied a problem with alcohol or drugs. June Marcotte, program director for food stamps and general relief of the County of Orange, testified Eichhorn received food stamps on a regular basis from 1989 through 1993, except when he was employed in parts of 1991 and 1992. He was eligible for $307 monthly in general relief if he participated in a work program working 9 days a month and looked for work 4 job applications per day. He last received general relief in November 1990 and was terminated because he did not submit a job search report. He applied for relief in March and June 1992, but was denied. The court found Eichhorn had violated the camping ordinance and was not involuntarily homeless on the night in question, finding he chose not to go to the armory. He also suggested defendant should have sought out familial assistance and should have applied for general relief. The court ordered him to perform 40 hours of community service. By a 2-to-1 margin, the appellate department of the Superior Court affirmed the conviction without opinion and declined to certify the case to this court for direct review. Eichhorn filed this petition for habeas corpus and seeks to set aside his conviction. Now, I don't have time to read the entire case because I only have about 3 minutes left, but I'm going to give you the beginning of it, and on Sunday I will conclude reading this. The court found that Eichhorn was right, that Eichhorn should have been allowed to make the necessity defense for involuntary homelessness, that the judge was wrong. Eichhorn makes a multi-pronged attack on his conviction. One of his contentions is that he was induced to waive his right to a jury trial by the court's pretrial ruling that he could not present a necessity defense. As noted above, the court ruled the defense's offer of proof was inadequate. Defendant had not presented enough evidence to get to a jury on the issue of whether he violated the law to prevent a significant evil. This ruling was error. In other words, not being able to sleep at night is a significant evil and is the basis for violating a law to avoid that evil. And we're going to talk about that when Bathrob Spears Broadsides returns on Sunday at 11 o'clock in the morning on Free Radio Santa Cruz here at 96.3 FM. I want to thank you for being with me today, and I want to thank you, Greta, for coming in and putting up with this spotty mic.
Thank you, Robert, for having me.
And if you want to contribute money to Jim Costner's defense fund, you can give a call to 469-0507 and talk to Greg or perhaps Greta if she happens to be there. Probably isn't likely she'll be there, but she might. Who knows? If you want to get in touch with me, you can call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833, off times. That's a 24-hour voicemail. If you want City Council to get off its fat collective duffs and do something to end the sleeping ban in Santa Cruz and to establish legal places for people to sleep and camp, call them at 420-5017. Also tell them to keep their paws off of Camp Paradise, because that is very necessary. And Camp Paradise, folks, don't be fooled by sweet words from well-meaning individuals who believe that if you only lie low enough that they're going to lay off you. I don't think that's going to be how it's going to run down. But I hope I'm wrong. And I'm sorry that Camp Paradise folks weren't able to call in. I hope everybody's doing good out there. And I want to thank you for being with us on this edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides.
Hey, who owns your town? Hey, who owns your dial? You're not going to hear it on the radio with the NAB at the microphone. Airwave monopolies are now legal. Hey, who owns your dial? Was a silent coup of the public interest. Two corporations now own most all the larger stations. Hear all about it, but only on the street. The NAB bought the FCC. Hear all about it, but only on the street. The news of the corporate buyout of the news. Let's not make the corporate news. Your TV, newspapers, music, books, movies, and magazines. I'm afraid it's basically coming down to six. That doesn't scare you, nothing will. Democracy with a highly centralized media is a sham. Hear all about it, but only